Don't speak.
Yeah, this definitely is controlling it.
Don't kill me because it hurts.
So you throw him the brain destroyer.
You're sitting there like a fucking baboon. Hey, fucking whiskey, sir. I couldn't stop at fucking 3 or 4 a.m. Right? Wow.
I'm CM Punk, and I wish we would stop genocide. You know.
Money blow. Money blow. Oh yeah, the clown. The only one of you buffoons who doesn't make me laugh. And as for you, I don't know you, but I'm sure you're a jerk.
Welcome to Winning Time Tapes, the perfect album part 2. I'm joined by my producer, Grink.
Hello.
And I currently have compiled a list of 60 albums, but in case I miss anything, Grink will join in with a few. And we're not determining whether this album is a 10. We're not seeing if this album has no skips, but if there is such a thing and how many are, perfect albums exist.
Yeah, listen to the beginning of episode 1 if you want a more in-depth explanation of what we mean by a perfect album. For instance,
it's part 7 of Winning Time Tapes is part 1 of this.
Huh?
Part 7, like episode 7 of Winning Time Tapes is part 1.
Yeah. So like for instance, is Bugs Bunny Exercise and Adventure a 10? Yes. Is it perfect? No. Too much Sylvester. Yeah, famously Bugs Bunny said, like, yeah, I know there were a couple things we could have cut, but like, hey, we're the fucking Looney Tunes.
Of course you realize this means war.
First part was basically all 60s. We're gonna start this one with Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. You might think, hey, what, two guys in their mid-20s, why are they spending 100 years talking about stuff that, in theory, their father should not have liked? Our father has a severe, likely fatal case of boomeritis, so that filtered down to us as well. Sticky Fingers. One of the greatest vinyl releases of all time.
Yeah.
You get to stick your finger into... Whose dick is that?
Is that not Jagger's pants on it?
Jagger pants. My favorite kind of instant rice. Jagger pants!
10 tracks. I think, for me, the Dead Ringers are obviously... Brown Sugar and Wild Horses are the ones people know the most.
For you, the whoops are?
The hits?
The hits.
Say the Dead Ringers. Yeah.
the ones that are a dead ringer for a hit song. Okay. Right.
Perfect. No?
Yeah. You just kind of tried to slip that in. You're like, I'll go with Dead Ringers here. Dead Ringers for the album. I have the stats on what we said was already perfect.
Yeah, that's what you have. I just have my little list.
Okay. So, okay, to recap, actually, we can do this. We should do this now.
Okay.
On the first part, I said that Bob Dylan's Bringing It All Back Home was perfect. Cam said Rubber Soul was perfect. And then we agreed that Revolver, Pet Sounds, Velvet Underground, and Nico, and the band's self-titled album, The Band, were perfect. No, Let It Bleed either is not on your list, or we discussed it and decided it was not perfect. Okay. Sticky Fingers.
Yep.
Jagger gets really deep in his imitating American records he heard.
Yeah.
10 years ago bag. Mm-hmm. Here. You Gotta Move. Dead Flowers.
Yeah.
That just... kind of artificial twang,
mm-hmm.
just somehow works.
Yeah, they've always been bluesy-inspired band in general. I think they may have caught up a little bit when they were super young in being just fast rock.
Yeah, but like definitely more blues when they were, you know, in the mid-60s and stuff. But this is very country is what I mean. scene.
Oh, yeah.
Very more country forward, which I think almost suits them a little better because they're white.
Yeah.
I just did, like, laughing at the idea of a guy hearing wild horses on the radio and being like, he's white? Like the Elvis movie? Just like thinking Mick Jagger was obviously a black guy, even though he's like not close. I think even thinking Elvis was black is a little crazy.
Yeah.
So those of you who have never seen me before will realize tonight that I'm totally insane.
Elvis sounds like Elvis.
Yeah.
Like, I could have never heard Elvis before. Like, Elvis could be coming onto the scene.
Mm.
Like, if I was, like, around in 1955 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would hear, like, you know, Hound Dog, and I'd be like, oh, whoa, this guy is, like, I think he's, like, Elvis.
I think it was Take It Easy by Leo Martin that I showed it to someone, and they thought they were black.
And that is like a Slovenian guy who looks like Dr. Eggman.
Yeah.
Like, I forget if he's Czech Republic. He's
Yugoslavian.
Yugoslavian. I mean, yeah. He was from the era when all those guys were basically best friends. They had no problems right up until they did. I don't see a reason to not give this a 10.
Yeah. But would you call it a perfect album?
Wow, I forgot you had to do that.
I probably would not. I'm leaning towards not.
You're leaning towards a no. Okay, here. What? Sway me.
Sway you into not? I mean,
if you use the song Sway, it won't work. I love that song.
Yeah, I wasn't going to use Sway. I don't know. I think for me, the weakest tracks are Can't You Hear Me Knocking and I Got the Blues for me personally.
Can't You Hear Me Knocking is, again, another strong favor of it being... Okay, it's not even about going individually by track. It's like that's like a tiebreaker, which I guess is what I'm looking for. I Got the Blues, yeah.
So for me, there's going to be another Rolling Stones album coming up that I think is a different level.
But you can't. My philosophy is that you can't play that game. Perfect is like a level that you reach in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like a dungeon.
Sure.
And you beat the game. But the game keeps procedurally generating lower floors of the dungeon. You have become perfect. You have beat the game. But there are still further levels where you can get stronger. I am going to call Sticky Fingers perfect because I just would not change. I wouldn't change a thing. Could not think of a thing to change.
Compared to the very last album that we talk about, the band self-titled, I feel like both of these have kind of a similar, but just... They make a distinct tone and message throughout, and I felt like the bands never, for me, sharply dip in quality, whereas I feel like this album may give you a few different looks throughout. They don't support each other as well as, say, the band's album does all the way through for me.
I think the band is more cohesive but has lower lows for me.
Okay.
I'd say that this album's floor is higher than the band's floor. Also, I do just personally enjoy Sticky Fingers more than the band.
Okay.
So that helps me personally sort it. I think I'd be quicker to call the band perfect, but I don't think I would call this anything other than perfect.
Next on my list, and interrupt me if you have something before that, is Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. So... I'm like a big racist.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of missed the bus on this album.
Oh, okay.
I think it's really good, but the concept of it, the song cycleness of it, I prefer it when a racist English guy high out of his mind on drugs is doing it, a la Astral Weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I love Marvin Gaye's more funky stuff, and I am not as into his more soulful stuff.
That's fair. What I noticed when listening to this album most recently, there's a lot of stuff like you know what's going on in Mercy Me, but I listen to Save the Children and Holy Holy, and he does love doing little, almost like McCartney-like things where There's like a glockenspiel and little like bongo bits that like happen like in each track that I find that he just puts in like the background of all these songs that are just like, it's the earworm part for me. Whereas I know his vocal performance is like what people naturally cling to, but those are the parts of me that like make this more a creative standout for me. I'd probably go a 9 on this album. I wouldn't give it a 10, and I wouldn't say it's perfect.
Yeesh, I was gonna go 9.1.
9.1, okay.
9. Okay, tell me how you really feel. Also, bringing up Glox. He's our first black artist in a while.
Okay, now. In Spiel.
You forgot about the Spiel!
I'm giving you the Spiel on Glox. Next on my list is Zeppelin 4. Again, feel free if you have something.
Again, I don't have a super strong knowledge of like the exact sequencing of when stuff comes out.
Well, whenever it feels right, you could bring it up.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm noticing I probably don't have anything until we get much later into the 70s. So it's your ship to captain.
Right.
Your ship to be in charge of.
Led Zeppelin 4.
Do we need to spend that much time on this?
Perfect. You're singing instant perfect.
Oh, 4 sticks. I've got 4. I know exactly where you can shove those 4 sticks if you don't think this is perfect.
I was just listening to that song today, being like, is this the worst song on the album? And like, nah, it's still like,
I think it is.
Yeah, it might be, but I still think it's good.
It's not enough to like soil what is, you know, Jimmy Page's satanic pedophilia notwithstanding, probably the best rock album of the 70s.
Yeah, probably.
We're gonna get to some other candidates, but I heard somebody describe like listening to particularly that initial stretch of Black Dog and Rock and Roll as like fucking the Grand Canyon. And like doing a good job of it. I mean, like, you throw in side two is what makes it perfect. Like,
yeah,
that Misty Mountain Hop and Going to California and When the Levee Breaks is my favorite song on the album.
Mm-hmm.
That drum, I mean, yeah, there's hundreds upon hundreds of hours of creative discussion, sampling, documentary footage about just those drums.
Yeah. I will say something super obvious. I feel like that's important to bring up at times. Albums with less tracks are way more likely to me to be perfect, even if the individual songs are like 4.5 to 6 minutes long.
Yeah, there's just less opportunity to hurt yourself. I mean, maybe there's something to be said for that being kind of a flaw in our heuristic as to determine what things are perfect or not, but that's just the fact of the matter. We will be giving double albums perfects, I think.
Well, we could see with the next album on my list, Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
You get 18 tracks.
Yeah, on the original release.
Yeah, and I don't see any reason not to give this a perfect.
Yeah. No, me neither. I just want to see his face. Pause. I guess, like, if you want to pick a point where it falls off of perfect status, it would be side 3. Also, I think it's pretty lame that one of Keith Richards' nicknames is the Human Reef.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, it's like, did you get, like, a new copy of Spider-Man? Oh shit, he's fighting the Human Rift today? This sucks. The fight's gonna be over in 2 seconds. He's just gonna web the Human Rift.
Yeah, Human Rift is like if Keith Richards was on Basketball Reference. That's just one of the third nickname he has.
That populates. Yeah. yeah, number one nickname. Guy who should be dead.
Yeah.
Already. Come on.
Cockroach.
There's not much to say here. If you want to, like, listen to some good songs, maybe in the shower while having an ice-cold but heavy, may I suggest Side 2 of Exile on Main Street.
Yeah, if you wanted to delay your call to the rope store.
Yeah. No, this is so removed from... I have never listened to this album in a bad mood.
Really?
This is good times music for me.
For me, that's side one. Like, that three-hit punch in a row on side one.
No, I'm talking about the whole album. I never listened to this album in any capacity when I'm feeling down. Mm. Like, there are other, like, Rolling Stones songs available for that. This is just, I'm never going to die. People like me. Perfect.
Next album, Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen.
It's so crazy how just saying those three words in a row populate the brain.
Yeah.
With that four-note sequence. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's there instantly. You probably even if you haven't heard the song on purpose before in any capacity, you say Born to Run.
I think, for me, this is a perfect.
Okay. I'm gonna be harsh on the boss. Much better nickname, though, than the human. The boss is really good.
The boss versus human riff.
Yeah.
Comic.
No, the boss, like, that is just, again, that's just somebody that man fights with. Or, you know, maybe a basketball reference nickname for Kingpin.
Yeah.
It's also important that he's the boss, not boss. Because, mm-hmm. like, boss is what a red cash, red, who mans the cash register calls you.
Cashier?
A cashier.
Yeah.
Calls you when you want to get some, you know, a Slim Jim and some Mike and Ike's.
Yeah.
What can I get for you, boss?
Yeah, dude, Starbucks guy. I always go to Starbucks at the same time on Thursday and just fucking every time it's boss. It's not pal, buddy, whatever. He's the chosen boss.
He has designated you boss. That's not the worst thing.
I feel like, yeah, just give me the boss order if he just knows me at this point. Yeah.
What is the boss order?
An impossible breakfast sandwich and a caramel crunch frap.
Oh, how long? Oh, I guess you get to spend a lot of time at work on the shitter. Good God. Yeah. How do you even handle any of that? That sounds so taxing on the soul and body. Well,
this is coming off of essentially having first graders wrestle on me and throw dodgeballs at me for an hour.
Okay.
So I just need things to feel kind of more inside because my outsides have been beaten.
You need to draw your attention inward. Yes. to the calamity that is happening inside you, because the horrors outside of you have subsided and you need to a change of pace. Okay. I get I'm glad we're talking about Starbucks. I have like 30 minutes of Starbucks material that I certainly have not stolen from Dennis Miller. I get a coffee-flavored coffee. Okay, where were we?
We're Born to Run.
Born to Run.
And you said you were going to be harsher on the boss, and that's how we got started into that.
Yeah, I think because of his association with Obama in my mind, it's like, you don't fucking mean any of this. Well, they clocked in at the factory at 5 a.m., didn't clock out until 9 p.m. It's like, you don't give a shit, dude.
It is fun that you can legitimately tax Bruce with that, but you can't tax Robert Plant for, like, I want to sleep with 15-year-olds because that's what they kind of sing about.
Well, because he's about that shit. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't give him the same tax.
Yes, it's much different. Plus, he doesn't spend a lot of time hanging out with people who hate pedophiles, which I guess is my analogy to Obama.
I think if you wanted to do music nerd glasses on, I think the only fun part of this is debating Born to Run versus Thunder Road and just what's a better track.
Because
I think now I actually kind of lean Thunder Road.
I lean Thunder. I've always leaned Thunder Road. Mm-hmm. I would sit this at like a 9-7.
Okay. You can put down as a winning time perfect.
All right. This is how we started off last time, disagreeing and then eventually finding mutual ground. I wrote it down initially in my notes as sticky finger, which is way worse sounding.
Yeah. Just, yeah, that's worse.
You listen to Sticky Finger?
No.
If you're doing something that is going to get your fingers sticky, you should always do it with all 10 fingers. To avoid having just a singular sticky finger.
Yeah, I definitely, at least one hand. I've never had just one finger sticky.
Well, I guess really, when you turn a page, you briefly have one sticky finger. If you need the help of your saliva to turn that page. Jimmy Page.
Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder.
This album runs into that problem we were talking about. The other guy's black. No, the length, you see, is what I mean.
Oh, the length of the black guy is the problem for you?
It's never been a problem for me.
Okay.
It really just comes down to the fact that this is a white album situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Recently, in preparation for this recording, I listened to, like, tracks I've either never or, like, rarely listened to from each of these, at least 70s albums.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to If It's Magic and Ordinary Pain, and like, yeah, these are both good. I like the mixture of, you know, high tempo Sir Duke and I Wish mixed in with the ballads of If It's Magic and so on.
I would say that we did skip over an album by the name of Innervisions,
yes,
which I prefer to Songs in the Key of Life, and I think is something approaching a 10 for me. I would give Innervisions a 10. I wouldn't call it perfect.
Okay.
Just because I think the sort of very... I'm going to end up contradicting myself a billion times throughout this, and trust me, black people have made perfect albums. but... there is a way in which a lot of Stevie Wonder's compositions become a little almost busy in a way that distracts from, like, the pure emotion that he's able to render so well. There's some kind of, incongruence going on that perhaps at times actually works quite well, but at other times I am looking for something a little bit more punchy and direct. And that goes for both albums, but here we'll wrap it up. Or I'll wrap my thoughts on it up with just a 9.5.
I would go like 9.7.
Okay.
I appreciate the more pop inclusions of this one compared to Innervisions to me.
Yeah, I'm never a guy who really needs pop anywhere if you're executing what you're doing exceptionally well. And the more, I also appreciate Innervisions' innovations.
Yeah. I basically didn't include Innervisions on my list because I know I like Songs of the Key of Life more and I still don't think that was perfect for me.
Yeah, no, it makes sense for you to not include it on your list. I should have included it on mine, but I think I was kind of cutting stuff that I didn't think you would bring up. I only brought it up because I know Songs in the Key of Life came, you know, a few years after Innervisions, and I wanted to give some shine to
Innervisions
and recommend it. Let me grab a Seltzy.
Moving on, we have Rumors by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh boy. Here we go. I got it.
For the magazine Rolling Stone, who are very hip and up to date, I'm pretty sure this is like the de facto perfect album, this and Sgt. Pepper's, in their minds.
Yeah, like, you know, pick your favorite, you know, middle period Beatles album, and then, yeah, Rumors. I think, maybe I shouldn't spoil there, but there's another one that I think is there.
That they pick?
Yeah, that they pick. I said, oh boy, because I've got a devilish zag coming.
I think... literally cut Oh Daddy. I guess it's just for me a matter of should I tax it for its inclusion of Oh Daddy or not? And I think in the past, we've allowed perfect albums to have skips. Thus, I would say this is a perfect album. And I understand there's been a lot of, for me recently, people hating on Songbird in particular. People do not like that like they used to.
I like just straight up like don't like, don't stop, don't like, go your own way. Like it's like, you know, car commercial music before they invented cars.
Sure.
Like just there's too much. So I'm a big fan of Steely Dan.
Yeah.
We won't be talking about Steely Dan, except for maybe one album that is coming up soon. Because what, this is 75, is it not?
This 77? Is 77. I think the Steely Dan album you're thinking of should be brought up next.
Yeah, it should be. And in fact, perfect. This is a great contrast. This is exactly what I want to set up. This is just one of those albums, like we talked, like it's in everybody's top 10.
Yeah. Know,
who is a, also I just, to make it very clear, this is a very, this discussion does not super reflect maybe even either of our personal musical tastes directly. It is a very like rockist, to use a kind of a school of music criticism. It's a rockist perspective on Perfect albums. We already said we're not talking about jazz really. And so a rockist music critic, and we can talk about poptimism as well, but a rockist is going to have Rumors really high. And I just like can't stand so much about this album. Everything is technically perfect. You know, the songwriting between the three main songwriters, every performance, the mythology surrounding the album, the cocaine and the cheating, like,
yeah,
it's just so mythologized. And then I listen to the music and it's like just fucking Michael's craft store. Like, there's not a lot of substance to me.
For me?
In some of the tracks.
I know there was like enough of an appreciation for Dreams. I think
best song on the album.
Right. I think since I agree with you on like the Don't Stop, Go Your Own Way, You Make Loving Fun.
You Make Loving Fun I like a lot too.
For me, the meat that I could play again and again and again and not get like tired of is Secondhand News and I Don't Wanna Know. Those for me are the more tracks I can go back to without like feeling, oh, this, I'm being sold a car for my family right now.
Mm-hmm. You can do it, man. I'm not in a, my sensibilities are not attuned to much of what is going on here. And they were obviously like compensating and redirecting their feelings and sublimating their feelings into these songs. Never Going Back Again is one of my favorite acoustic compositions in all of music. It's one of the hardest songs to play and sing at the same time of all time.
Yeah,
certainly. It's exciting. It would be against my, it'd just be so against what I stand for and what I fight for in music that is so different from this.
Yeah.
That for me to then turn around and call this perfect would be like falsehood.
You personally would have to like become almost, if not an appreciator, you would start considering Queen as like something for this list.
Ooh, yeah, sure, yeah, something like that. Yeah, like just Queen. Queen's very interesting. You mentioned Queen, a band that I truly hate, and Fleetwood Mac even. Like after this album, Tusk, yes, I maybe like slightly more, but some of their 80s stuff like Mirage and Tango in the Night, like I feel like they find a deeper, darker, like more true to themselves sound almost in those later albums.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of those albums that's a monster pop album with so many cool things going on. It sounds absolutely perfect down to the molecule. Mm-hmm. And not something that I would ever rate perfect. I'll give it a 9.9.
I will go more traditionalist and say perfect. I just think I see what you mean, where this is kind of like almost what you would like think someone crafting a perfect or a greatest hits album is like. And I just think it's a very cheesy perfect storm scenario where we did get all of these perfect pop hits in one place that was made at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. They had just like a brain blast.
Brain blast! Yes.
Okay, Asia.
Yeah.
by Steely Dan. Mm-hmm. I remember where I was and what I was doing the first time I listened to this album all the way through on X, the Everything app. Steely Dan was enjoying a resurgence among people with shitty mustaches and dad hats and, you know, double knee Carhartts, among other kind of arty, rocky, jazzy bands. Our father is a big-time Steely Dan disapprover. Not a hater, like some songs. Disapproves of their whole deal.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was a certain type of person who was really into them at the time they were popular that we would have also hated.
Right.
The true Danman.
Yeah.
Now you have all these, you know, post-ironic fellows.
Yeah.
Walking around. Me being one of them, more or less. Everything, just the cynicism and the drugs and the misanthropy, self-loathing combined with, you know, narcissism and arrogance, all these themes in Steely Dan's work combined with this pristine production, bringing in session musicians and berating them and making them do 100 takes. Spending an hour working on the fade out of one song. That's swampy ooze surrounding this album elevates it for me. And there are still just like huge hooks on this thing too. Like, yes, they love their jazz bows.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, they like a song you can sing along to.
Yeah. You know, Peg. Nice short and sweeter one.
One of the best guest vocal performances in rock history, certainly. Mm-hmm. Black Cow, Asia, Deacon Blues, Home at Last would be the stumble.
Yeah,
I Got the News and Josie, both awesome.
Yes, yeah, Josie's awesome.
Perfect, my opinion.
All right, I think that's a grink perfect.
Okay,
I'll put it down as a 9.5 for me.
9.5. Well, there you go. We dovetail nicely. You could learn a lot about somebody from asking them to rank Asia in Rumors.
Yeah.
The Asia Rumors test. Ooh, I should write a pitch about that.
Were they both 77?
Yeah, both 77. Oh,
okay. Yeah, that is nice then.
What time was Rumors in 77?
Let's see. We got September for Asia and for Rumors.
Was it a spring release?
And I imagine it feels spring, doesn't it?
It does.
February.
So nearing spring.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, the contradictions there. September is kind of on the
darker
verge, on the verge of fall and then on the verge of spring, but they're kind of inversely. Anyways.
Next, we're going to do these two back to back. My Aim is True and This Year's Model by Elvis Costello.
I also just wanted to mention that it seems like we have established kind of tacitly, almost a one-skip rule, where you can have one song that does not fit the pedigree of a perfect album, but then that does not mean that you then disqualify. If you have two obvious skips, you're probably not ever going to be perfect, unless it's a long album with historic highs among highs.
Yeah, like that's where the Exile on Main Street gets back, it gets rewarded for its length.
Yeah.
Instead of punished.
Yeah, where they have like three different sections where you're losing your mind crying at the like magnificence of what's happening. Oh, we should go back and make White Album perfect. Anyway, too many. Elvis, not Black Elvis, very much extremely White Elvis.
Yeah.
Like, you hear this guy on the radio, you know exactly what the fuck time it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to say you don't care about women.
I feel like with going into My Aim is True, I prefer this over This Year's Model. And this is an instance where I actually don't have any skips, but I'm only giving it a 10. I'm not calling it perfect. I feel like Allison is like, and then maybe like The Angels Want to Wear My Red Shoes are like the only big like super switch-ups, whereas there is a little Chuck Berry same songness throughout this album.
Yeah, he's found a formula, and for this first album, he's largely going to stick to it. Allison just sang the name of that track, I started listening to it in my head, and chills. There's so much to love on here. I have maybe a couple skips, personally. I'd say Sneaky Feelings comes to mind. But, and then another benefit for this album is that it's so short. It's very close to being perfect because he doesn't have a lot of time to make mistakes. A lot of his tracks are pretty short. It's 12 songs. We're in and out of there in what, like 32 minutes, 33 minutes?
Yeah, something like that. 33 minutes.
Yeah. So now it's all over the place because I'm feeling like, doesn't it take some time to round every, maybe, and this is what you're getting to too, like I need a little bit of variety. It takes some time to like round out into perfect form.
Yeah. I feel like whereas, say, Sticky Fingers has that, you know, country flair over Rolling Stone style, mm-hmm. and you can enjoy that itself as a, just something different compared to the rest of their discography.
Yeah.
This feels not rush, but it's very just like boom, 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 boom. And without Allison, which again makes it make the case why I'm considering it to be perfect.
Maybe the best song on the album.
Right. Because it's like slower and is the thing that's, it cuts through like peanut butter in any smoothie.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, good analogy. When you're talking about music, you gotta come correct with the analogies and figurative language on the whole. It feels like he's delivering the nucleus of his sound to you and being mm-hmm. like, watch this space. We'll introduce more organelles as time goes on. I'm going to get the endoplasmic reticulum in there and the mitochondria and so forth. Yeah. Oh, and that's what I was going to say is like you were talking about Sticky Fingers as it references and builds upon Rolling Stone's sound.
Yeah.
I wonder if we should start also thinking about like, okay, let's say this is the only album that artist ever put out.
Yeah.
Would it be perfect? Would it be, or maybe even not necessarily talking about perfect or not, but would it be better? Or would we think of it more highly, less highly? If this is the only, if Elvis Costello debuted with this album and then died in a misogyny accident, would it have a better chance of being considered perfect? I'm not sure. I think we should probably start talking about the next album.
Yeah, I think
I'm going to give my ratings at the end of talking about both albums.
Okay. The second album, I like the first album more. I think this does do a little more slowed down, kooky, weirdo shit that I think gives it more personality than the first album. But I think the first compositions were just better.
Yeah, he's like, okay, now I'm established. Let me flex on you a little bit. You know, show what I kind of stuff I can do.
Yeah.
It's also important to note that there's a song released in the UK as a single.
Watching the Detectives?
Yeah, which also helps to break up a lot of the sameness.
Uh-huh.
So if we were doing an Are You Experienced and talking about right. the US version of My Aim Is True,
yeah.
which includes Watching the Detectives, which I really love,
mm-hmm.
That would also help.
Yes.
The album's case. I think any given Sunday, I'm probably more wanting to listen to this year's Model all the way through, front to back. But I think I would have needed to do All Killer, No Filler. And keep in mind, there are like three filler songs. You can even call filler across both these albums.
I think this album, for me, definitely becomes perfect if this was a double album of both of these albums together. Even keeping all the filler.
Yes! Yeah, that too. I think it would. Man, wouldn't that be something? And like, it very well could have. Maybe he doesn't find a deal for another 6 months. Like, putting out a double album as your first album, I don't know how many times that's been done. But if the songs are there, like, My Aim Is True came out in July of 78. My Aim Is True came out in March of 77, and this year's Model was July of 78. And, you know, that's not very far apart. He was
months backwards on those, but yeah.
Oh, March 78. Oh, even closer together.
Yeah, closer together.
He was ready to go. He was ready to explode. I'll just give these both 10s and move on. No perfects.
Yeah, I agree. Both 10s, neither are perfect.
How many artists even have two 10s in their discography? Not very many.
No, but I'm sure we've talked about them. Back to the Boss, Darkness on the Edge of Town is the next one on my list.
Okay. I feel like there's an album in here that I want to talk about. Oh, yeah, okay, London Calling. Let's talk about
that,
London.
That's the next one on my list.
Oh, okay, I thought London Calling was 77 for some reason.
Is it? I thought it was 79.
No, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure it's 79. Let me back it up again, then.
Okay.
Just to reinforce something that I think is developed for you, but it's worth talking about. The Ramones' self-titled debut.
Okay.
If you think about lists of, like, American bands and, you know, punks' influence on music, there are some bands that deserve their flowers as kind of, you know, we have proto-punk, punk, and post-punk, and then all their variants. Mm-hmm. Proto-punk, we're talking about largely, like, the Stooges, I think, is the marquee proto-punk band.
Yeah.
And then the Ramones is the marquee, at least American punk band. They have this super strong aesthetic, this Beatles. They're so Beatles-inspired in so many different ways, but they flip the image on its head.
Yeah.
And they're writing these, like, fucked up, grungy, what are essentially, like, kind of simplified, almost girl group songs.
Yeah.
Like Ronettes songs.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it wouldn't be perfect is just because that is all they're doing. They're delivering a sound to you, and it's insanely, like, iconic. It stood the test of time. There are songs that are still played from this album all the time because they have some kind of spark in them that elevates them above, like, the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
Joey Ramone's vocals are just so unique. It's like a Mick Jagger, Rolling Stone situation, or Bob Dylan even, where, like, outside the context of their music, they might not be the best singer, they might not be that suitable for other contexts, but in the context of the music, it's just this alchemic combination.
Mm. Spoilers, we might be talking about Kurt Cobain later at some point, maybe not today's episode, but I think
we are going to need a part three.
Yeah. I think outside of him, I think it's harder for, like, music made for that type of audience. I think the more kick out of it and the thing that separates it is the live aspect to it. I just don't think punk's sound, not is like bad in studio, but it's just like there's going to be less nominees for a perfect album discussion, in my opinion, just because of the nature is kind of like made for feeling, getting the feedback back from the audience.
Yeah, you might have a perfect night out at CBGB's or whatever, but.
Right.
Yeah, putting it to, that's a really amazing point you just made. Putting it to wax kills a part of it.
Mm.
That makes it exceptionally difficult to claw your way back to what would make it perfect in the first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely felt like that album deserved a little bit of time.
Yeah.
In a perfect albums discussion.
Darkness on the Edge of Town, Bruce Springsteen, right after Born to Run. I don't have any skips on this, but I would not call it perfect. I think
I'm in the same boat. I don't see a single, like, there's not even a song where I'm like, do I want to listen to this right now? And I'm a hard no.
Yeah.
I could listen to any of these songs right now and be perfectly happy with it.
The closest for me is Something in the Night.
Same for me.
So, yeah. I think this album is even more so than the last one, the, like, blue collar aesthetic.
Yeah.
I think anytime we mention an artist a second time, it is because they aesthetically are doing something different, even though the quality may match the first. I think we've seen that even in today's episode with Costello and Stones, and to some extent between Intervisions and Songs of the Key of Life.
Yeah, if you weren't perfect the first time and your thing is, okay, well, there's more of that where that came from, and you're not iterating on it in any way, you're not at least tweaking it, expanding your sound in some small direction, then you wouldn't be mentioned a second time. This is definitely a darker album.
Yeah.
As the title of it.
It's an edgier album.
It's a darker, edgier album.
It's more of a city town album.
It's more about, like, living in a town rather than running around. Okay.
They don't call it, you know, lightness inside the
middle
mansion
of a place that doesn't have structures.
Tightness in that's the Arm.
That's like a prog album, Tyler. Emo.
Yeah, that's definitely a Floyd album.
Oh, God, I'm so glad we don't have to talk about those jokers. Yeah, kick them while they're down. Kick them. I would just give this a 10, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's a 10 and move on.
Yeah.
London Calling by The Clash.
Oh, okay, one more thing about Darkness on the Edge of Town. I will say, if that's the only Bruce Springsteen album that ever got made, it's a perfect album. Like, I just have to, I would have to give it a perfect. And he suffers from the fact that he nearly got there last time.
Yeah.
In a way. Where it's like, you... Yeah, I don't know. So then maybe, again, the philosophical question is, so then shouldn't that just be a perfect album? Then what about there being other Bruce Springsteen music affects that music in and of itself?
I think the same thing that I went through with, like, Elvis Costello is, like, I think the compositions, again, were better on the first time around. I just think he does a more interesting flavor on the second set.
So all I'm saying is... If we agree that if you didn't have those initial compositions to compare to, you would probably give it a perfect. Yeah, what about those existing compositions actually changes the sound captured on that album to drop it down to a 10? Because otherwise, I think I would just have to say it's both a 10 in a vacuum and a 10 in reality.
Yeah. When judging something, there's a human condition of not either wanting to, like, shit on everything that, again, when you're trying to, like, find the best of the best... As well as having some reverence of, like, perfect should be very special to me specifically. So I think there's, as you pointed out, there's going to be contradictions and...
Yeah, they're unavoidable. You cannot think of a perfect solution to this problem. Philosophically minded.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Okay. There's a lot of good stuff on offer here.
Yeah.
In this Elvis-inspired album cover album. Elvis today.
18 tracks. We got over an hour of musical content.
Jimmy Page would hate this album. 18 tracks.
Yeah.
Too many tracks.
Yes.
But for like a 15, 14 track album. I thought you were like stonewalling me on that, and I was like, okay, I need to make sure this scans.
Yeah. Okay.
I go back and forth. What about you?
On it being perfect or...
Yeah.
I think for me, this has more... Whereas Exile on Main Street, I think very high floor. I wouldn't say the same care or time put into each piece. I think, you know, Side 1 shows that on Exile. But this falls more into a White Album where it's just like, put it in.
Yeah, it's like... world-beating anthems that people will be playing in their car for the next 100 years, along with some, like, genuinely forgettable, except for the most hardcore of Clash fans.
Yeah.
Kind of album tracks. 10, though. Would not put this below a 10.
10, but...
Yeah, a firm 10, but this is just, again, one of those albums that could have been a perfect single album.
And... I have...
That's going to draw some heat. I think a lot of people want that album to be considered
perfect. Sorry, not sorry. My last representative for the 70s is Michael Jackson's Off the Wall.
This is going to be a hot take.
Mm-hmm. You say it's better than Thriller?
Fuck no. This is the scariest Michael Jackson has ever looked. He's doing the Mr. Beast face.
He is.
Tux plus brick wall plus graffiti's very swag. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but he'd look prettier if he smiled less.
It was whiter.
Well, the teeth actually need to be less white, I think. He's got the chompers out.
Got a smile.
Mm. Well, I mean, this album's great. let's not
is it beat perfect? Around the
bush. No, no, it's not perfect. Whoa!
Take a look at this track list.
I'm applying my vision ray.
I think this is perfect for me.
I like the take there. All right, I'm not gonna think about it too hard. Maybe write some more original tracks.
Yeah,
you getting your shit written for you? Whatever, dude. Put me down for 9-6.
Okay.
Cam being a bit more generous today than I am. Have we had a consensus? We've had multiple, right?
Yeah, in the beginning with Zeppelin 4 and Exile, I think.
Okay. I forgot to write those down, but I've got those. If you're not British, Jewish, or addicted to heroin, good luck making a fucking perfect album. There's got to be some British Jew on Smack that made an album in, like, 1980 that's awesome. Okay.
Oh, I mean, weren't the Beatles managed by a British Jew?
On drugs, yes.
Yes. So there you have. So it's the best band in the world, is that combo.
Well, no, it's the manager, not the band. And he was gay.
He was gay. Does anyone know about the Beatles without him?
They sucked. Famously, when he died, they got way worse.
I mean, they knew it. They had to break up about it.
When did he die?
67.
Yeah, nothing good happened after 67 for the Beatles music-wise.
No. All downhill
from there.
And with that note, join us back for part 3 of the 80s.
Oh, we hit an hour?
Pretty much.
Okay. Wow.
You have any other albums you want to include real quick?
70s? Let me Google best 70s albums. Any guesses for an album that neither of us talked about that'll show up immediately?
Saturday Night Fever by Bee Gees.
That's not a Bee Gees album, that's a soundtrack album with various artists.
You said that would come up.
I'm just correcting you that it's not a Bee Gees album.
I'm answering the question.
You answered it erroneously. We got Pink Floyd.
Ank!
We got David Bowie, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust.
You want to talk about it or not?
No, if I was going to talk about a David Bowie album, I'd talk about Hunky Dory, but again, just not the consistency that we're looking for. Blue by Joni Mitchell, Woman, no. After the Gold Rush by Neil Young. We have Neil Young at home. It's Bob Dylan. Paranoid by Black Sabbath.
That's something.
We can... Let's do... Paranoid? Oh, okay. I have two?
Okay.
Because CCR, also not consistent enough, correct? We like their hits, we like a couple of their album tracks, but not going to get there. Cosmos Factory, not going to get there.
Yeah.
Any other Velvet Underground albums? Loaded. Bright, White Light, White Heat. Maybe that'd be perfect for me, but we don't have to talk about it.
I think probably one that you've scrolled past is Who's Next?
Not even close for me. I'd put that album in the low eights. Grievous Angel by Graham Parsons.
Good album.
Another Zeppelin album, Houses of the Holy. Physical Graffiti. I think, Unknown Pleasures by Joy Division.
Oh, yeah.
79.
79.
I think a lot of these would fall under albums where it wouldn't be good content because we wouldn't have a lot to talk to each other about. I could probably talk about the 1970 Velvet Underground Loaded for half an hour extemporaneously by myself, but, you know, that's not the podcast.
I'm a huge Joy Division fan. I think what's keeping out Unknown Pleasures from contention is you can't do the Are You Experienced trick of putting These Days and Love Will Tear Us Apart on that album. I think with those inclusions, I think that's a perfect album.
Yeah. Kraftwerk had a couple albums out.
Computer World?
In the 70s. No. The Man Machine, for certain. And I think one before that, maybe two before that. Autobahn, Trans-Europe Express. Yeah, computer. It hadn't really become a computer world yet.
Stop.